Greetings and salutations and welcome to Full Time. My name is Scott Nason, as we are joined as always by co-host Daniel Scarpino on this August 18th edition of Full Time as we delve into the world of soccer. Full Time, brought to you by the Game Sports Show, the Game Entertainment and Media, and sponsored by Northern Superior Brewery in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Daniel, it's been a while since you and I have done a show, and that's mainly because of a very busy schedule for yours truly. So again, we have missed talking to you, and our listeners have been very patient for our next edition of Full Time. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man, and it's great to be back with you after what's been a pretty busy summer, but soccer is in full swing, and definitely looking back to being forward, looking forward to being back on the show, rather, with you on a regular basis. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing wonderful, Daniel, and since we didn't have a preseason show, we can kind of mix that in with the results that have already happened in the Big Five leagues in Europe, so let's start right there, and let's start in England and one of our favorite, if not our favorite league, the Premier League. Certainly lots of things to discuss, but let's take an early look at the table. And believe it or not, just two teams with no losses and two wins to start the season. As expected, Manchester City, who are top of the table along with Arsenal, Brentford, Tottenham, Newcastle, Leeds, Chelsea, and Brighton, all with 4 points and yet to lose, rather, and lots of teams without a win so far, including, surprisingly, Liverpool, who have two draws, including one at Fulham. And at the bottom of the table, Manchester United, 0-2, as they were absolutely thrashed by Brentford last weekend, 4-0. So, Daniel, certainly lots to talk about in the Premier League. We'll just kind of leave it an open-ended discussion, and I'll start with you.
Well, I love the way that the Premier League started for me, Scott, and there was so much hype going into the season, and there's still so much hype after just having 2 weeks played. Teams, obviously, that we expected to do well, the likes of Manchester City. We knew that Arsenal was going to be better. We know that Tottenham's going to be really good this year. Newcastle look a really good outfit. All of these teams are showing themselves to have some great quality. The Chelsea and Tottenham match last week had some great fireworks. And then you look at the very bottom of the table and you see Manchester United, who, you know, I've conceded so many goals, haven't really produced much of anything. And at the end of the day, you know, it makes for some good viewing and it makes for some great discussion. But I love the way that the Premier League has started. I think the team that we see right now at the top of the table in Manchester City, I had them pegged to win before the season even started. I think that they're just such a quality side, and with the signings that they've made this summer, they've just improved all the more. So, it's been a great start to the Premier League, Scott, and I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. What about yourself?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it as well. And going back to that Chelsea-Tottenham match, Daniel, certainly lots of controversy. And today, we're recording this on Wednesday, August 18th, one of the VAR officials, Mike Dean, admitted that he made the wrong call in judging Tottenham's controversial last-gasp equalizer against Chelsea. Mark Cucurella's hair was pulled back by Cristiano Romero in the moments before Harry Kane's leveler, in the 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge. Referee Anthony Taylor failed to give a free kick for the incident in real time, and Dean, with the help of video replays, decided against referring him to a red card review. According to Dean, "I've looked at the footage, spoken to other referees, and upon reflection, I should have asked Taylor to visit his pitch side monitor to take a look for himself. The referee on the field always has the final say. It goes to show you, no matter how experienced you are and have spent more than two decades as a Premier League official, you're always learning." And certainly Mr. Tuchel had some harsh words for the referees. I mean, it is only one match, but you know how the Premier League works, Daniel. You know, those 2 points that when you're looking down the road could be very big. They got it wrong. They apologized. Is that enough or should more be done?
Well, I think more should be done, Scott, because you just hit the nail on the head. That 2 points is a lot, because you take a look at the way that the Premier League was won last year, was won by one single point, with Manchester City on 93 points and Liverpool on 92 points. So that could be all the difference. And, you know, with VAR, we've had so many discussions, you and I have, and there's been so many discussions in the world of football surrounding VAR. It seems as though England is the only country in the world to have not figured out VAR and how to properly use it in terms of its application and what it's actually meant to do. So it's interesting to see. I thought, again, the fireworks from a neutral perspective in the Tottenham-Chelsea game was great to see. But I think that there needs some sort of level whereby, you know, the right call can be made, because it's too late after to revisit it. Because once the call is made or not made, then it's done. You can't really go back in time, can you?
No, you can't, Daniel. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was the problems with Manchester United, and certainly their new manager, Eric Van Hag, rather, has, you know, you can't pin all of this on him. I mean, Manchester United has had problems going back to last season, where they lost a bunch of road games, or they didn't finish in the top four. And you look at the managers that are already on the hot seat, including one of my favorites, Frank Lampard in Everton, and Solly, I can never say his name, in Southampton. You know, the Premier League's a big business, and fans are not patient. Is this Manchester United, can you peg all of it on their new manager?
No, you know what, Scott, you can't peg it all on the new manager. And I say that obviously as a coach, so maybe I'm a little bit biased, but everybody's been saying it for so many years that this squad needs a complete and total overhaul. And that remains to be true with Eric Ten Hag. So I think that he has a lot of sorting out to do. This was never going to be a short-term fix. I think, you know, we talked about this with Arsenal in the past too. You always have to look above. You always have to look at the top. So with the Glazers, who run the club at Manchester United, I think that's where you really have to look. I would definitely say you can't blame all of this on Eric Ten Hag. You can only probably blame very little on him. He doesn't have the squad that he wants. He doesn't have the infrastructure that he wants, and the club's a bit of a mess at the minute. So, yeah, no, you can't blame it all on the manager. A lot of people have to look in the mirror and take accountability at Manchester United. Otherwise, they're going to keep having the same problems, Scott.
I mean, they did look lost in Brentford over the weekend, Daniel, but how good was Brentford in that first half? I mean, it was 4-0 at halftime, and that match could have been 8-0. I think Brentford kind of let off the dogs, but, you know, that's another story. You know, we talk a lot about the big teams, but you talk about it, you know, a team like Fulham, who just promoted, they draw. I believe Nottingham Forest got their first win over the weekend. So the little guys, sometimes, you know, we talk all about the big teams and their problems. Got to give a little credit to the teams like Brentford and Fulham that are, you know, having posting early results.
Oh, without doubt. And you'd like to think that it's not just momentum so early on in the season that they're just riding the high of a new season. But at the same time, the Fulham-Liverpool game, I thought that Fulham was absolutely outstanding. Brentford, they scored those four goals within the space of 35 minutes against Manchester United. They look really good. Even Leeds, too, they've played some good football when they haven't really done much this summer, and they lost some of their top players. So, yeah, the little teams as well that have come up and they're showing themselves to be quite good. You love to see that as well, and that's what the Premier League's all about.
Speaking of Leeds, they'll host Chelsea this weekend. Arsenal traveling to newly promoted Bournemouth, and Manchester United, they have to host Liverpool. That one will certainly be interesting. Both teams without a win, unbelievably, after 2 weeks of play. Daniel, Serie A and Italy, just one match played so far, and no draws in the first week. You have Napoli, Juventus, AC Milan, Atalanta, Fiorentina, Inter Milan, Lazio, Torino, Roma, and Spezia Calcio, all with opening match wins. You know, kind of give us a preview of Serie A from your perspective, one you follow closely. What are you looking at this season?
Well, I'm looking at a really open league this year, Scott. And last year, I always kind of had the feeling that it was going to be Milan that was going to be at the top by the end of it, and they were. We knew that Juventus was going to get better. I really do believe that Juventus this year will take another step in the right direction. But this looks like a really, really, really open Serie A this year. I think the likes of Lazio, they're going to be quite good. I think with Roma and Jose Mourinho, I think they're going to be good again. Milan will be right about there. Atalanta has added some more attacking quality to their team. Napoli have kind of done some addition by subtraction with the guys that they lost in the summer and with some other guys that they brought in. So this is going to be a really competitive Serie A again, much like what we saw last year, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw even some more teams in the mix this year, Scott.
Yeah, it certainly was an exciting season in Serie A, and I would agree, Daniel. A league I don't follow as closely as you, but I think you might see a couple surprises there at the top of the table, not the usual suspects. specs, if you will. Should be very sure. fun indeed. Spain, just 1 week in their league so far, La Liga, Villarreal at top of the table, joined by Atletico Madrid, Real Betis, Real Madrid, Osasuna, Real Sociedad, and Valencia, all with opening week wins. Barcelona, they had an opening week draw. Give us your La Liga preview here. You know, you usually have the Madrids and the Atleticos and the Barcelona, should it be them, or is there another team or two you're watching?
Well, I think it is going to be them again, Scott, and Villarreal. I think, you know, they've showed themselves over the past couple of years since their Europa League victory a couple of seasons back to be a pretty good side, very solid defensively and very pragmatic. But what I will say in terms of just checking out La Liga over the summer, for a side in Barcelona that claim to not have much money, my God, they buy a lot of players.
They buy a lot of players.
So in theory, I think Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Atletico Madrid should be near the top this season. Which one's going to get it, I'm not entirely sure. I don't think that Real Madrid will have too much of a hangover from their Champions League victory from last season. So I think that they're going to be right about there. But yeah, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Atletico Madrid for me are going to be the top three. And then you might have a side like Villarreal or possibly Real Sociedad or Valencia trying to get that fourth spot, Scott.
Daniel, I'd be very interested to look at the books for Barcelona. Like you said, a team that's supposedly in financial despair, and yet they keep purchasing players. How right. is this happening? Is there any oversight in La Liga, or you know, are these owners just what's the story there? Is there something more that you know fans aren't quite getting?
I'd like to know, and to be honest with you, and as we always are on this show, we're truthful. I really don't know. And the same questions that all the fans have and that rival clubs have and that everyone in the world of football has, I have the exact same questions. I don't understand how a club who can be in such financial turmoil, or at least they claim to be, can continue to purchase players and sell and buy and buy and buy and buy and then be on, you know, on record saying, oh, we're in the market for this player and we're in the market for that player and that their wages are going to be this much per week when they couldn't afford X amount of players 2-3 seasons ago. So it really doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up. But I'd like to know the answers to these questions because everybody in the world of football seems to have them, Scott.
Yes, they do indeed, Daniel. Moving on to the Bundesliga, a couple matches played so far in Germany. No surprise, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund at top of the table with 6 points, followed by Mönchengladbach. I think I actually got that one right. FC
yes,
Köln, Union Berlin, and Mainz. They all have 4 points. Bayer Leverkusen, usually in the mix, bottom of the table after two matches. I feel like, Daniel, we have only been doing this show for a while, it almost seems like it's a foregone conclusion that Bayern Munich and PSG, who we'll get to in a moment, will win their respective leagues. Of course, no Lewandowski in Bayern Munich, but are they still the class of Germany, or are you looking at some other teams? Give us a Bundesliga update.
I'm not looking elsewhere, Scott, even without Lewandowski, and I'll tell you why. Sadio Mane. And
yep.
the reason that Bayern Munich is going to do as well as they will is because they've kept the core of their squad. They have a specific way of playing, and it doesn't matter who they go up against. They're not going to change their ways. But now they've added a world-class player from Liverpool in Sadio Mane, and that just really replaces Lewandowski. Totally different players. They play up front in very different styles and very different ways. But Bayern Munich, for me, is still the class of the Bundesliga. I think Dortmund will be close. I don't expect Leverkusen to be at the bottom of the table for very long. I think RB Leipzig will also climb up the table. And Frankfurt will probably get into the top six as well. But for me, it's still Bayern Munich all day long, Scott.
Yeah, I think so as well, Daniel. Again, the Bundesliga, not a league I follow as closely as the Premier League or even Serie A. You know, I'll watch it if there's not another match on, but it seems like it's Bayern Munich and everybody else. Finally, Daniel, in France, after two matches, no surprise, PSG top of the table, the only team with 6 points, followed by Marseille, Lille, Toulouse, Monaco, and Lens, who each have 4. I got to admit, Daniel, the 5 leagues we talk about, this is the one that I probably will not watch more than a couple matches all season long because it just seems like it's so top-heavy with PSG that rarely do they seem to be having any competition against them. Will it be the same this year?
It's going to be the exact same again this year, Scott. And I will say this, as we've talked about on so many different occasions on this show, if they weren't classified in France as being a top-5 league in Europe, if that would mean that we wouldn't have to talk about it, which would be awesome, because I'd rather talk about the Portuguese league. I'd rather talk about so many other leagues, but this is a top five league in Europe. PSG are going to run take a look after two games. They've already doubled in terms of goals scored. They've already doubled the second best team. So that's after two games alone. So imagine what's going to happen after whatever it is. And I think it's 38 games that they play in France as well. So it's going to be PSG's again. It's just, again, a matter of what they do in the Champions League. But I've got no faith in them in the Champions League, so it really doesn't matter all that much.
Yeah, it's very early in the soccer season, Daniel, starting a little bit earlier because the World Cup will be played in Qatar starting in November. And you're starting to see reports of different players that might want to, you know, get into a better situation for the World Cup with the transfer window closing here in a couple weeks. I see Christian Pulisic from Chelsea. Manchester United has inquired about a loan for him. And, there's still some movement to be made. Are there going to be any real big deals that you're aware of here in the next couple weeks? We'll cover it on our next edition because it will likely be after the transfer window has closed. But is there still more movement ahead? It seems like there always is in the world of soccer.
Well, you're right, Scott. And there is going to be some movement ahead. I just don't think that there's going to be anything that's going to shake the ground or going to shake the world of soccer, really. I just think it's going to be a few little pieces here and there. Like you took a look the other day when Manchester City just added another left back to their squad. I think that teams are going to start adding pieces that will add depth to their teams, to their clubs, but I don't think that there's going to be any sort of earth-shattering moves. If there are, I'll stand corrected and I will be a bit surprised, but I think teams have what they have at this point in time, and they're just going to have to add little bits and pieces around in order to try and make deeper runs come the end of the season.
One other question for you, Daniel, as far as the moves that have been made since the season began and into the summer, what would you say was the biggest move? If you had to pick one, what team made the best move in your opinion?
Well, in terms of the best move, I'm going to have to say Manchester City and Erling Haaland. And the reason I say that is because Manchester City was looking for a number nine. And even though that they were playing without a striker for the past season or so, it just goes to show, even in the first game alone, the way that Haaland played, it just adds another dimension to the way that Manchester City wants to play. And you don't want to say that they're unstoppable, because we saw in the Champions League last year that they were stoppable, but they're such a good side already. And now they add Erling Haaland, who's a world-class player. He's still so young. He's incredibly quick, incredibly fit, very strong, can make the kinds of runs in behind that Pep Guardiola wants him to make. And now that just adds to the dimensions that Manchester City have in the midfield. So I think that that's been the best move of the transfer market, Scott. What about you?
I would agree 100%, and that's exactly what I would say, because there's a term, the rich get richer, and Manchester City certainly wants to win the Premier League, but again, their Achilles heel has been in Europe in the Champions League, and I think adding Haaland is going to give them, and he's so young, like you said. I mean, this guy is, you know, he didn't score a goal in his home debut last weekend, but I would expect that you'll see many goals scored out of him. Just a strong team. They're going to be very tough to catch in the Premier League. Scott Nason and Daniel Scarpino with you for this August 18th edition of Full Time. And Daniel, let's move on to the Major League Soccer. Some matches with big crowds over the past couple weeks. I tuned into one with Atlanta United as they beat Seattle at home in front of 65,000 fans. Boy, Atlanta has certainly taken to the world of soccer. Looking at the standings, 34 matches will be played in the regular season, with most teams having about 8 or 9 left. In the East, Philadelphia continues to lead with 48 points, followed by Montreal with 43, New York City FC with 42, New York Red Bulls with 40. Orlando, they hold the last playoff spot, and there's a bunch of teams on their tail and above them, so it's going to be a good playoff race. The top 7 in each division make the playoffs. In the West, LAFC, class of the MLS, with 57 points and just 4 losses. Austin FC in second with 48, while FC Dallas has 42 points and Minnesota has 38. Vancouver, they hold the last playoff spot. And again, several teams on their heels. Daniel, again, with Major League Soccer, I'll tune it in from time to time. And, you know, when I watch it, it's not bad. And, you know, the crowds have really, in the matches that I've watched, I watch a good chunk of that Atlanta United match against Seattle. And just, I mean, it almost looked like a Falcons game in there. The fans were so rabid. And so certainly the MLS is doing a lot of things right. Not maybe getting the notoriety nationally, but improving, I think, as far as their quality of play. Your thoughts on Major League Soccer?
Major League Soccer, and we talk about it every time pretty much that we're on the show together, Scott, that it always takes a step in the right direction season by season. So it's been awesome to see. I followed Toronto FC again very closely this year. As expected, they're not having the best of seasons, but as the years go on with the guys that they've acquired, they certainly will do a lot better. But yeah, no, I love the MLS, and the quality every year continues to improve with the players that they add, the coaching development amongst the amount of teams that are in the league. So I think it's been solid. LAFC, for me, again, the nice thing about soccer is that you could have a change in opinion as the season goes on. I can't see them losing anything at this point. They're just such a good side. So yeah, I've been really enjoying the MLS with the games that I have watched. Toronto FC, again, they're there, but they're not ready quite yet. But yeah, it's been an entertaining season so far, Scott. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have as well. And my Columbus Crew currently in the playoff picture, battling Orlando and several teams, including Atlanta, to try to get in. Daniel, let's end the show with a local soccer update here stateside. Of course, the high school boys soccer season will begin, I believe, next week as Zuhai will be back on the pitch. Yep, things start early in the fall sports season statewide. Daniel, give us a local soccer update from Sioux, Ontario.
Well, we're kind of on the opposite side of things. We have our youth leagues that are winding down. This upcoming week we'll commence playoffs, and then it will be all said and done. But for the university and college ranks, we are in full swing. So this Saturday, actually, with Algoma University Soccer, we leave to go to Toronto for a 1 week training camp where
nice.
We will have two exhibition fixtures, preseason games, as well as some training. So it's going to be huge. And then we start on September the 2nd, which is a Friday. Our first game of the season goes against Brock University at 11 a.m. at Superior Heights. And yeah, so it's our first home game. So things are coming very quick. Preseason training camp has been going very, very well over the past couple of weeks. And yeah, it's all true well and on here in the Sioux, Scott, and soccer is alive and well. So it's awesome.
Yes, it is, and it's alive and well back on full time. We'll be doing our shows bi-weekly from this point forward. Our next show will be sometime in early September as the summer got a little busy, but we will continue to inform our listeners and give our opinion on the wonderful world of soccer. Daniel, as always, thanks for joining us on this August 18th edition of Full Time. Enjoy the rest of your summer before you get back to classes and school, and we'll talk to you on our next edition of Full Time, sir.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the rest of your summer as well, and thanks for everyone who's tuned in again, and we'll definitely have those bi-weekly shows coming, and obviously once the World Cup comes around, it'll be even more than that. So, yeah, thank you so much for everyone listening, and always a pleasure, Scott.
Yes, during the World Cup, we'll probably have weekly shows, if not more, because it's going to be very exciting. That's going to do it for this August 18th edition of Full Time, brought to you by the Game Sports Show, the Game Entertainment and Media, and sponsored by Northern Superior Brewing in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. For Daniel Scarpino, Scott Nason signing off. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks on our next edition of Full Time here on the Game Entertainment and Media.